rent prices and stuff.
There's so many of them. I've lived in Britain since 1989. I have never seen that many homeless people ever in my life before.
What do you think about the fact there's so much homelessness in Britain now?
Well, because I think the inequality is, increasing. So social system is breaking down, and that's why the homelessness is there.
As Boris Johnson lives comfortably in his Downing Street apartment, others live rough in the streets of the capital. How does the public feel about that?
He's the Prime Minister of UK, so he has to live in a security place. He can't live just like us ordinary people.
If Prime Minister lives in a warm place, he must ensure that people which he rules, they should stay in the warm houses, at least in Christmas, I think.
Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, I think he doesn't give a toss about what's happening on the streets, to be honest.
So I don't think it's fair for him to have a certain rule for himself, and the rest, we have the rules of seeing people sleeping outside, you know. I mean, I'm not a rich man, but if I had more space, I'll invite somebody in my house to for the night.
Honestly, I don't think he really cares about homeless people. Like, he only cares for himself, if you know what I'm saying. Like, apparently he's been partying along around the coronavirus time, so I don't think he's a great prime minister for us to actually do it.
I think he's looking at the national security, he's got other issues on his mind. Now, I think with the homeless is that just like we do a petition for everything, why don't we do a petition for the homeless?
He don't bother anybody. He's a joker. A real joker. Real comedian. Our minister is a real comedian.
To be honest, I don't think Boris has done enough for a lot of things. I think in his mind, the homeless crisis is probably bottom of his list.
No, he hasn't, but at the same time, he's got way more on his plate as well. Yes, it's always been an issue, and homelessness is something that's an issue everywhere in the world, not just in London and England.
I don't feel as though he's addressed the issue in an adequate way whatsoever. Sadly, though, I feel as his policies are part of a larger conservative agenda to minimise spending and focus on finance in London, which is a shame. But I don't feel like he's kind of a puppet of the Conservative Party, so it's not essentially his problem. It's more of an issue with the changing dynamic of politics in Britain.
Oh, we need to change all of our behaviour, thinking and attitudes as well. It's not for only Boris Johnson, it's also the people thinking. We need to change this one.
This is really disgusting that some people are too wealthy and other people have nothing to sleep.
Boris Johnson is Boris Johnson, isn't it? He can afford it. That's his job.
I don't know how the people like him or me can sleep in peace while the other people are sleeping rough.
It's hard for me to say, really. I think in terms of the amount of money that's going towards the scheme and in terms of helping other homeless people, it's more money definitely could go into places that need it most, you know, to deprived areas, which can be across all of England.
Why has homelessness gone up so much in the UK? And has COVID had an impact?
I think last 2 years, maybe a pandemic has affected this because, you know, most of the people became unemployed. But I think the main reason here is there is a strict, you know, common rules in here, and community don't want to accept someone who not belongs to their, you know, who not familiar with them.
Well, I think there's different reasons. First of all, like, there's a lot of poverty. There's a lot of the Brexit has had a massive impact on like people applying for benefits and so on. And then also I think the refugees is another one. And
maybe people are not giving it more thought, you know. And I'm not saying to demonstrate about it, but just to make your opinions known and your feeling, you know. Positive action and non-violence, that's it.
The lockdown, which has now taken away people's jobs so they can't actually get a job, or something else that has happened in their family.
Because there are more people who are struggling to find a job, they're struggling to earn money, and that there's not enough places for them to live.
I think that's because of the government spending is going towards war and so on.
Especially during COVID and stuff like that, I imagine loads of these places, you know, shut down, like the hostels and certain places where homeless people would have, you know, like an outlet almost, somewhere to go and somewhere to stay. And obviously, during COVID, it's that messed up a lot of things, I'd imagine.
Less jobs, you know, economy maybe. Well, partially it's due to the pandemic, obviously, with people losing their jobs and whatnot. Rising inflation, all of these things take a part into it as well.
I feel as though freer, well, sort of freer liberal markets in Britain, and us having like I say, the paradigm of neoliberalism is squeezing the amount of spending that governments can focus on it. Things like economic crises become broader issues, which are taken more of a priority.
I think housing probably. A lot to do with housing. There's a lot of people coming into the country as well, which is also probably contributing to not enough beds, not enough spaces. You know,
there are not accurate policies in place to make sure that everyone is taken care of appropriately.
Well, myself, I'm self-employed, and I felt a big difference, yeah, to be honest. You know, before COVID, and now it's much difficult to get clients and, you know, make more money.
As long as I know, COVID, during the COVID lockdown and things, you know, they did increase that, you know, that accommodations that people were, I mean, you know, given the accommodation, but definitely financially, mentally and physically, people are suffering a lot, actually, yes.
Here's the size of the problem. 11,580 single households were assessed as sleeping rough when asked. That's an increase of 39.4% compared to 2019-20. Families involving black ethnicity are disproportionately homeless. They account for 9.7% of those officially seen as needing support, but they only make up 3.5% of the population. Overall, in 2019-20, over 258,000 received homelessness assistance, a huge number for one of the world's most wealthy countries. How do people here in the city feel about the fact that a first world country such as Britain still has so many individuals living in a housing crisis or even sleeping rough?
All of them, most of them is drugs, alcoholics, and for this reason they don't want to get into flat, because if the government give them a flat, they can't pay the rent. They can't pay the rent, they can't keep the flat maintained. So how can the government will help them out?
I was thinking that Britain is like the one of the most wealthy countries in the world. But when I came here, I saw a lot of people in the cities. They were living in the streets, and literally they were eating from the no garbage.
I think we're very selfish. I you know, we don't really care about people next door. I think we're losing the sense of community, and until we go back to this community, I don't know, minded people, that we're not going to sort homelessness or any other issue, poverty or whatever, drugs or whatever.
I'm just surprised it's happening. You know, yeah. The money is here. They could do it if they want to do it. This is how I feel about it.
We've been supported by three different countries, and we still can't provide for people to actually become stable. And I feel like that's upon our Prime Minister and of our associates.
There's always a solution if you want to find it, I would say. If people say there's not a magic money tree, but I guess if you really wanted to find the money, then you probably could somewhere. It's just where that money's going and where the government wants to prioritise.
Well, like Indira Gandhi said once, do you know what she said? I'll move from Bombay all the poor, so there will be no poor in India, Bombay. And Mr. Boris Johnson will do the same. Move all the poor from London and it will be rich London.
People aren't, I feel like we're not doing enough. I feel like we're focused on the wrong things, you know what I mean? On the news every morning it's this and that. You know, there's always another problem and majority of the time it's about COVID or... But yeah, I just feel like there's so many problems at the moment that...
In life you usually just focus on yourself. But, you know, it's also nice to think about other people. But you see, the people up there, the Prime Minister and stuff, they only think about themselves.
When you're dealing with things like homelessness, just giving them money isn't going to fix the issue. They need to learn what to do with the money, how to make the money stretch for them forever, you know, what to do with investing, pensions, getting jobs, things like that.
Governments are disassociated from people in Britain. And the other issues have become a higher priority, such as sort of economic sustainability and international competitiveness of Britain, rather than there's just no sort of community spirit voting for Labour movements and left-wing movements. There's no collective action anymore.
It is really frustrating. It is really frustrating, and it is really the hamper of the British peoples.
And I do know that, you know, society is complaining, people's complaining.
When I'm walking and if I see, I feel so bad. I mean, you know, I'm lucky enough to have, shelter on my, head. But when you see the, you know, it's the first world country, developed country, there's no shortage of money. But sadly, those people are sleeping rough, not looked after.
What is the future for the United Kingdom when the streets of its capital have become home for over 10,000 people?
We know this, like, rich people are getting richer, poor people are getting poorer, which obviously is going to lead to more people being homeless. And the housing, in London especially, is ridiculous. It's so expensive. How many people can actually afford, you know, to buy a house, to rent a decent place that they can go home? Not many people.
Well, I don't see where we're going. Hopefully I'll be standing and be able to demonstrate about it with no violence. You know, I'll talk about it. That's all you need to do, you know. Just show the government that this should not happen. You know, people should not sleep outside, especially in this cold weather.
One thing is, I'm also not blaming only nation, because some people can work and they should work. And those who cannot, they should get help.
To be honest, I think it'll only get worse. I don't think, you know, hopefully, because like you say, we do have the resources to help these people, you know what I mean? And, you know, they're all, especially at the moment, like you said, I don't know what the number was, but 10,000, you know, people going to sleep, especially, like I said, during winter, it's freezing.
Well, it's either going to increase or it's going to go lower until the Prime Minister does something. And he's not doing much right now.
Although homelessness has gotten worse over the first few years, look back 30, 40 years, maybe even more, it has gotten much better since then. Unemployment has gone down loads and loads. So it is getting better. Like I said, because of how complex it is, it's going to take many, many years.
The future is just to get worse, currently. If it continues down this road, then there'll be no momentum or motivation to change anything unless something fundamental changes within the parliamentarian system.
I think there's a lot more than 10,000, to be honest with you. I don't think there is 10,000. I mean, you've only got to go up and down London and you see them on the trains, you see them on the roads.
Unless we have a change in the government, I cannot see anything positive. I think there is a need for a government who would be sympathetic, who would understand the actual issues. If you are living in a mansion, I am not too sure how would you understand the difficulties and issues people facing on the street.
I think it's going to be even more, to be honest. If nothing's going to change, it's going to get worse. Yeah, because the young generation is growing as well. They're struggling to get jobs. They're struggling to get a property or to afford to rent. It's going to get worse, yeah.
Well, it's not sending a good image, if you ask me, but I think the whole world is the same, really. it's not just Britain, but I think it's going to get better. Let's just hope it gets better.
I think I had my time. Perhaps the next generation is going to be getting even tougher time. So, in one hand, government is borrowing billions and hundreds of billions of pounds. Nobody knows where it's going, but the next generation has to pay, and perhaps, sadly, the homeless people will be the last one to be in the queue to get the help.
Mr. John Sparks, the chief executive of Homeless Charity Crisis, has said, "You cannot free people from the cycle of homelessness without a proper home and, crucially, the support they need to keep it long-term." Amnesty International adds that frontline services warn they are at breaking point due to a rise in homelessness, and that the UK could be facing a human rights catastrophe. At the same time, when it comes to housing difficulties, black households are particularly at risk.
As the UK experiences yet another rise in COVID-19, and as Boris Johnson appears focused on his own survival, his government struggles to solve the homelessness issue. The Prime Minister could himself be evicted from Downing Street. Yet his problems are small compared to being homeless or sleeping rough day after day, while the government's COVID crisis has made it even less able to help one of the most vulnerable groups in the country, people with nowhere to live.
Limelight. Data shows violent attacks from right-wing groups in the United States are significantly more prevalent than from left-wing or international or extremist terrorist groups. A report also found that right-wing extremists perpetrated two-thirds of the attacks and plots in the United States in 2019, and over 90% between 1st of January and 8th of May 2020. We now present you an article written jointly by Sergio Olmos and Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, "Top US Democrat Warns Recruitment of Veterans by Extremists May Increase." Top U.S. lawmaker who heads a congressional committee investigating the targeting of veterans by extremist groups has warned that the problem is a serious one and could get bigger unless it is effectively combated. In an interview with The Guardian, Mark Takano, a Democratic congressman from California, said he was concerned about the recruiting strategy being deployed by violent right-wing extremist groups, especially in America's increasingly fraught political climate in the wake of the 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol. Mark Takano is the chairman of the House Veteran Affairs Committee, which has begun hearings into the rising threat to veterans. The first of three hearings occurred in October of last year, but Takano has been concerned about the threat for years. Mark Takano said, "Targeting of veterans by violent extremist groups is a problem, and it could become a bigger problem if we don't understand what's involved and the dimensions of it." Takano said the issue was bipartisan, and the definition of extremism did not favor liberal or conservative. He said, "We define extremism not by the content of the ideology of the group, but whether a group espouses, advocates, endorses, or promotes violence as a way to achieve their ends." But he was clear the current threat of veteran recruitment comes more from the extremist right. Mark Takano said, "We are seeing that this violence is occurring at a far greater degree among right-wing groups, especially within the last 6 years." He claimed, "As far as we can tell, right-wing extremist groups are the ones targeting veterans for recruitment, and there's not really any evidence that we're seeing that left-wing groups are targeting veterans." Data shows violent attacks from right-wing groups in the United States are significantly more prevalent than from left-wing or international or extremist terrorist groups. An analysis by the Center for International Strategic Studies, a nonpartisan think tank, looked at 893 terrorist plots and attacks in the United States between January of 1994 and May of 2020. It found that far-right terrorism has significantly outpaced terrorism from other types of perpetrators, including from far-left networks and individuals inspired by Daesh terrorists or Al-Qaeda terrorists. The report also found that right-wing extremists perpetrated two-thirds of the attacks and plots in the United States in 2019 and over 90% between 1st of January and 8th of May 2020. The 738 defendants charged in the 6th of January attack on the Capitol include 81 individuals with ties to the military, while 5 were active duty service members. Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt was shot dead by police while attempting to break into the House chamber. Recently, 3 retired Army generals wrote an opinion editorial in the Washington Post warning of the threat of a coup in the 2024 U.S. election, saying it could succeed with the aid of rogue military elements. Mark Takano's committee conducted its first hearing in October. Takano said, "We looked into how and why veterans were being recruited by violent extreme groups. At the history and the track record of groups like the Proud Boys, 3% Militia, Oath Keepers, Boogaloo Boys and others." Takano said extremist groups see an advantage in having veterans in their ranks. He said, "In that sense, they are a greater target for recruitment than non-veteran Americans." The chairman of the House Veteran Affairs Committee, Mark Takano, described friction in addressing the problem among some Republican lawmakers on his committee. Takano said, "At least 2 members wouldn't even engage the subject." He added, "When it came for their turn, they didn't ask the witnesses any questions, including the witness that was chosen by the Republican team." He said, "The 2 Republican members instead just used their 5 minutes to attack me for holding the hearing." Takano sees the issues that leave veterans vulnerable to extremism as being the same as for the general population. He said, "The things that contribute to veterans being vulnerable are the same things that affect all Americans. Social isolation, addictions, mental health issues, and emotional trauma." He added, "We need to recognize that there is a problem that we have politically motivated violent extremist groups that are targeting veterans. We need to look at ways that we can protect veterans." The Department of Justice said on Thursday, 13th of January, Stuart Rhodes, the founder and leader of the far-right Oath Keepers militia group, has been arrested and charged with seditious conspiracy in the 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol. 10 other individuals face the same charge, which carries a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. Announcing the first seditious conspiracy charges brought in connection with the Capitol attack, the Justice Department said members of the extremist group came to Washington intent on stopping the certification of Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump in the presidential election. Stuart Rhodes, a 56-year-old from Granbury, Texas, is the highest-ranking member of any extremist group to be arrested in relation to the attack. The Justice Department said Stuart Rhodes and Edward Vallejo, a 63-year-old from Phoenix, Arizona, were being charged for the first time in connection with events leading up to and including 6th of January. Stuart Rhodes was arrested recently in Little Elm, Texas, and Edward Vallejo was arrested in Phoenix, Arizona. The nine others already faced charges in connection with the Capitol attack, among more than 725 individuals to do so. In a statement, the Justice Department described the Oath Keepers as a large but loosely organized collection of individuals, some of whom are associated with far-right militias. The statement said, though the Oath Keepers will accept anyone as a member, they explicitly focus on recruiting current and former military, law enforcement, and first responder personnel. Members and affiliates of the Oath Keepers were among the individuals and groups who forcibly entered the Capitol on 6th of January 2021. Stuart Rhodes, the founder and leader of the Oath Keepers, did not enter the Capitol, but is accused of helping put into motion violence that disrupted the certification process. Thousands of pro-Trump rioters stormed past police barriers and smashed windows, entering the Capitol building, injuring dozens of police officers and sending lawmakers into hiding. Five people died in the attack, including a Capitol police officer and a Trump supporter shot by law enforcement. Some in the mob erected a gallows outside the Capitol. Some chanted, "Hang Mike Pence," as they searched for the vice president who was presiding over the certification process. Mike Pence rejected pressure from Donald Trump and his advisors, who said it was within his power to block the certification process, citing unfounded claims of electoral fraud in battleground states and throw the election to the U.S. House. Scenes from the attack on the Capitol were broadcast around the world. The Justice Department release described one of the most indelible moments. At approximately 2:30 p.m. local time on 6th of January 2021, it said, some of the men now charged with seditious conspiracy and other Oath Keepers and affiliates, many wearing paramilitary clothing and patches with the Oath Keepers' name, logo and insignia, marched in a stack formation up the east steps of the Capitol, joined the mob, and made their way into the Capitol. Later, another group of Oath Keepers and associates formed a second stack and breached the Capitol grounds, marching from the west side to the east side of the Capitol building and up the east stairs and into the building.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity. Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan al-la'in al-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human rights from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, especially when we look at his justice. Now, one interesting fact that happened during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam is that there were many hypocrites at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, who resorted to new devices every now and then to protect the means of their lives and of their enjoyment and pleasures, and to keep the indigenous person enslaved. They used to use various weapons in remote as well as in the near past to achieve these ends. The main weapon, however, that was used by them was the wrong interpretation of religious orders. This policy has not been peculiar to the Muslims. It has, you know, been adopted by all hypocrites claiming to be, you know, to profess Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So nothing new there. The most simple weapon of which the hypocrites took advantage of was their claim that prophets have invited people to be, you know, mystical in a way, to abstain from indulging in desires, instead of, you know, seeking worldly matter, they should remain poor, and they should, you know, prefer indigenous and poverty over trying to, you know, work and make an effort. So they managed to mislead people into how a person should live by saying, you know what, a mu'min, a believer, should live a life of poverty, a life of simplicity, a life of abstaining from all these kind of desires. And they got away with it, where most people said, well, yeah, that makes sense, because I'm going to heaven, so why should I care about the worldly matter? By such a concept, they stole and deprived their sustenance from them. Now, the hypocrites gave much publicity to their, obviously, their views that we just mentioned, and desires that the common man should accept them as correct, because that's how much they were publicized on the pulpits, on Friday sermons, by the scholars who work for these corrupt governments. So that the orders may remain, so that others may remain deprived, and they themselves may continue to be rich and enjoy the pleasures of life. The king is getting richer and the poor is getting poorer. The only difference is the poor is thinking he is doing something for the sake of Allah, and the wealthy is saying, what fools. It is necessary that to counterattack their false propaganda, we should clarify the true position. Not only by doing so that we can find out the foundation of which these policies, obviously, of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and as given by him, were based. It is true that Amir al-Mu'mineen used to say that, you know, from your life I have only two loaves and two pieces of clothes. It's true that Amir al-Mu'mineen was, you know, giving advice to companions that you should seek, an easier life. But that wasn't the message, though. Now, let us take a short break, then we continue right after.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You can send us your emails, comments and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at justice from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi as-salam. When we look at the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi as-salam, he himself, he lived a very simple life. In fact, sometimes it's a harsher life. And so did his close companions and close disciples. Now, is that the same message that the Umayyad dynasty, for example, or those before the Imam or after the Imam, were pushing to people that you should live a life of simplicity and harshness and don't indulge yourself in desires and pleasures because, you know, God forbid, you could be, you know, going to hell, while the kings and the rulers themselves get richer day by day and indulge in their entertainment and their whatever they're doing? Oh, no. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, because this is a very big topic, I can't go in detail. With Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, when he was treating himself harshly, because he was in a position of leadership, he himself had to endure, and he has to go through, what the lowest people in his government might go through in terms of poverty and in terms of clothing and in terms of house. If Amir al-Mu'mineen as a ruler had a better food or a better house or better clothes than any of his subjects, any of his citizens, then he would not be a fair leader. Therefore, first and foremost, is an obligation of Amir al-Mu'mineen that he should live a simple life, that no one under his government can come and say, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I am poor, I don't have food," while you as a Khalifa, as a king, indulging yourself. So when Amir al-Mu'mineen dressed in a certain way or ate in a certain way, he does not want me and you to live poverty, to not work, to not earn, to not enjoy life. On the contrary, many times people try to do this, and the, you know, the relatives would complain to Amir al-Mu'mineen, and Amir al-Mu'mineen would tell them off. He said, "This is not your life." And even when he talks about himself, he says, "Your imam, you know, he had two of this, two of that. That was enough for him. I know you can't do this." He does say, he said, "I know you cannot do such a thing that I'm doing, because it's not your position. But you can have taqwa, you can have piety, you can have such and such." With his disciples, with his, you know, the saints of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayh, for them it was self-purification. Not that they did not earn, not that they did not work. Each one of them had a trade. Each one of them was working. Each one of them was earning. And they were putting their money in their place. But they themselves, in order to train themselves, they had to deprive themselves of certain acts that is a willingly from their own. So we can't compare what the Umayyad dynasty, for example, were pushing the agenda that you should live a simple life and putting people into poverty, and Amir al-Mu'mineen's agenda, where he's trying to say, actually, no, on the contrary, you need to work, you need to earn, you have the right to live a happy, prosperous life. But if you want to reform yourself, that's a different issue, considering that you have what you need. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله 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 صل على محمد وآله
in the limelight.
In June, a statistic floated across my desk that startled me. In 2020, the number of miles Americans drove fell 13% because of the pandemic, but the number of traffic deaths rose by 7%. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times opinion columnist David Brooks. He's also the author of The Road to Character. The article has been published in the New York Times opinion section and is titled America is Falling Apart at the Seams. In June, a statistic floated across my desk that startled me. In 2020, the number of miles Americans drove fell 13% because of the pandemic, but the number of traffic deaths actually rose by 7%. I couldn't figure it out. Why would Americans be driving so much more recklessly during the pandemic? But then in the first half of 2021, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, motor vehicle deaths were up 18.4%. even over 2020. Contributing factors, according to the agency, included driving under the influence, speeding, and failure to wear a seatbelt. Why are so many Americans driving irresponsibly? While gloomy numbers like these were rattling around my brain, a Substack article from Matthew Iglesias hit my inbox this week. It was titled, All Kinds of Bad Behavior is on the Rise. Not only is reckless driving on the rise, Matthew Iglesias pointed out, but the number of altercations on airplanes has exploded. The murder rate is surging in cities. Drug overdoses are increasing. Americans are drinking much more. Nurses say patients are getting more abusive, and so on and so forth. Matthew Iglesias is right. Teachers are facing a rising tide of disruptive behavior. The Wall Street Journal reported in December, schools have seen an increase in both minor incidents, like students talking in class, and more serious issues, such as fights and gun possession. In Dallas, Texas, disruptive classroom incidents have tripled this year compared with pre-pandemic levels, school officials have confirmed. This month, the Institute for Family Studies published an essay called The Drug Epidemic Just Keeps Getting Worse. The essay noted that drug deaths had risen almost continuously for more than 20 years, but overdoses shot up especially during the coronavirus pandemic. For much of this time, the overdose crisis has been heavily concentrated among whites. But in 2020, the essay observed, the black rate exceeded the white rate for the first time. In October, CNN ran a story titled Hate Crime Reports in U.S. Surge to the Highest Level in 12 Years, FBI says. The FBI found that between 2019 and 2020, the number of attacks targeting black people, for example, rose to 2,871 from 1,972. The number of gun purchases has also soared. In January 2021, more than 2 million firearms were bought, the Washington Post reported, an 80% year-over-year spike and the third highest one-month total on record. As Americans' hostility towards one another seems to be growing, their care for one another seems to be falling. A study from Indiana University's Lilly Family School of Philanthropy found that the share of Americans who give to charity is steadily declining. In 2000, 66.2% of American households made a charitable donation. But by 2018, only 49.6% made a charitable donation. The share who gave to religious causes dropped, as worship service attendance did. But the share of households who gave to secular causes also hit a new low of 42% in 2018. This is not even to mention the parts of the deteriorating climate that are hard to quantify. For example, the rise in polarization, hatred, anger and fear. When I went to college, all those years ago, I never worried that I might say something in class that would get me ostracized. But now the college students I know fear that one errant sentence could lead to social death. That's a monumental sea change. It has to be said that not every trend is bad. Substance use among teenagers, for example, seems to be declining. And a lot of these problems are caused by the presumably temporary stress of the pandemic. I doubt as many people would be punching flight attendants or throwing temper tantrums over cheese if there weren't mask rules and a deadly virus to worry about. But something darker and deeper seems to be happening as well. A long-term loss of solidarity, a long-term rise in estrangement and hostility. This is what it feels like to live in a society that is dissolving from the bottom up as much as from the top down. But what the hell is going on? The short answer is, I don't know. I also don't know what's causing the high rates of depression, suicide and loneliness that dogged Americans even before the pandemic, and that are the sad flip side of all the hostility and recklessness I've just described. We can, of course, round up the usual suspects. Social media, rotten politics. When President Donald Trump signaled it was okay to hate marginalized groups, a lot of people were bound to see that as permission. Some of our poisons must be sociological. The fraying of the societal fabric. Last year, Gallup had a report titled, U.S. Church Membership Falls Below Majority for First Time. In 2019, the Pew Research Center had a report, U.S. has world's highest rate of children living in single-parent households. And some of the poisons must be cultural. In 2018, the Washington Post had a story headlined, America is a nation of narcissists, according to two new studies. But there must also be some spiritual or moral problem at the core of all this. Over the past several years and over a wide range of different behaviors, Americans have been acting in fewer pro-social and relational ways, and in more anti-social and self-destructive ways. But why is this? As a columnist, I'm supposed to have some answers. But I just don't know right now. I just know that the situation is dire.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, transmitting the problems and flaws of the spouse to others. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of transmitting the problems and flaws of the spouse to others in the family life and the challenges of the family. Now, when we look at the family life, we see that people do have many problems in their life, and they cannot cooperate with each other. They're having issues. And when we look at in depth, and we do an in-depth study of the family relation, we find that the main issue is that the spouse, they transmit the problems and flaws of their spouses to others, maybe to their sisters, brothers, parents, friends or closer friends, or maybe the husband's friends or the wife's friend. So these are the main issues that whenever in a family, when a husband transmits the problems of her wife to her, for example, family members, or to his own family members or the friends, there the problems starts. On the other hand, it's the same, that if wife transmits the problems and the flaws of the husband to his family or maybe to her own family, there the issues starts. And we can see that when the secrecy of the family is leaked by one of them, by either of them, then the problems starts in the family life. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of transmitting the problems and flaws of the spouse to others. And we said that this is one of the common things that you can find in every single family, that when a family do not have a peaceful environment within it, it is because that one transmits the problems and flaws of the spouse to the others. Maybe those others can be their brothers and sisters, it can be their parents, or maybe children even, or maybe the friends or neighbors or anyone. Whereas in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said, "Hunna libasun lakum wa antum libasun lahun," that your wives are clothes for you and your clothes for your wife. Now, I think I gave this example before, but it's good to just repeat the example that, you know, Allah says in the Quran that you're the clothes of each other. What does clothes do? It hides the flaws. It hides the faults. It hides the problems that I have. When I put on clothes, if I have any flaws or faults, or if I have anything on my body which I do not want to show, it hides it. So when husband and wife are the clothes for each other, they should hide each other's flaws. They should hide each other's problems. And by talking to each other, by helping each other, they should solve these issues. If someone has some kind of flaws, so he definitely needs a help, or maybe she definitely needs a help. Who is the best person who can help him or her? It's the spouse. It's the husband who can help wife, and the wife can help husband. Therefore, we need to pay the role of being the clothes of each other, means hiding and protecting each other, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In California, United States, dozens of freight cars are broken into every day on Los Angeles railways by thieves who take advantage of the train stops to loot packages bought online, leaving thousands of gutted boxes and products that will never reach their destinations. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at Agence France-Presse. The piece is titled, Thieves Loot Freight Trains in Los Angeles with Impunity. Stay with us for more. According to the tags found on Friday by an Agence France-Presse team on a track near the city center in Los Angeles, which was easily accessible from nearby streets, many major U.S. mail order and courier companies such as Amazon, Target, UPS, and FedEx are being hit by the thefts, which have exploded in recent months. The thieves wait until the long freight trains are immobilized on the tracks, and then climb onto the freight containers, whose locks they easily break with the help of bolt cutters. They then help themselves to all sorts of parcels, ditching any products that are difficult to move or resell, or are too cheap, such as COVID-19 test kits, furniture, or medications. Rail operator Union Pacific has seen a 160% rise in the thefts in Los Angeles County since December of 2020. In October of 2021 alone, the increase was 356% compared to October of 2020. Union Pacific said in a letter to the local authorities, seen by Agence France-Presse. The explosion in looting has been accompanied by an upsurge in assaults and armed robberies of Union Pacific employees performing their duties moving trains, the letter said. The phenomena spiked recently with a peak of activity linked to Christmas shopping. According to figures reported by Union Pacific, more than 90 containers were vandalized every day on average in Los Angeles County in the last quarter of 2021. To combat the trend, Union Pacific says it has strengthened surveillance measures, including drones and other detection systems, and recruited more security staff for its tracks and convoys. Meanwhile, police and security agents have arrested more than 100 people in the last 3 months of 2021 for trespassing and vandalizing Union Pacific trains. While criminals are being caught and arrested, charges are reduced to a misdemeanor or petty offense, and the person is back on the streets in less than 24 hours after paying a nominal fine, said a spokesman for the rail operator. In fact, criminals boast to our police officers that there is no consequence for them, he said. Union Pacific wrote to the Los Angeles County Attorney's Office at the end of December, asking them to reconsider a leniency policy introduced at the end of 2020 for such offenses. The operator estimates that damages from such thefts in 2021 amounted to some $5 million, adding that the amount in claims and losses does not include respective losses to our impacted customers, or to the impact on Union Pacific's operations and the entire Los Angeles County supply chain.